Welcome to the Speaking Podcast. You can find all our episodes on speakingpodcast.com. We're also on BitChute and YouTube. You'll find the links in the podcast description. I'm also a podcasting coach because I've got four other podcasts, four getting to the top 0.5% and the other one at 1.5%. And you'll find everything on bio.link/podcaster. My guest today, presentation coach, please welcome. He's in England. Well, he's not now, but he's Italian. Please welcome Andrea Pacini. Did I do it justice?
You did, Roy. Thank you very much. You pronounced it perfectly. I'm looking forward to this conversation.
Yeah, myself. So you might let the listeners know, who's Andrea?
As you said, Roy, I'm a presentation coach and I'm the head of Ideas on Stage UK. And the reason why I'm so passionate about public speaking is because when I was a little kid, Roy, growing up in Italy, I grew up in a family of very small business owners. My parents have always run their own small business together. They still do. And so as a kid, I saw the challenges because raising four kids while trying to run a business is not easy. But I also saw in them the spark, the entrepreneurial mindset, the proactive approach to life. And so that's why I always wanted to become an entrepreneur, to run my own thing. Now, in reality, Roy, that remained a dream for a long time because before doing what I'm doing now, I tried many things, started many projects, all of them failed. But it was useful because in that process, what I realized was that there are so many great ideas that fail, not because of the ideas themselves, but just because of the way they are presented. And that's why, to cut it short, that's why over the years, then I became a presentation coach. That's why my mission is to stop great ideas from failing just because of the way we communicate them. My mission, Roy, is to help hundreds of thousands of business leaders and their teams share their message so they can grow their business, increase their influence, and why not make a positive impact in the world.
Brilliant. Yeah, love it, love it. So I know we're going to delve into the speaking that you're doing, but I also see you're a podcaster. And I was interested because when I was investigating, I saw you do it in Italian and in English. So is it you're interviewing different people or are you actually translating it? What's the actual purpose?
That's interesting because I do 100% in English. You might have picked up very old episodes where I've done a few interviews in Italian with Italian guests, but these were just some special things. If there was a special guest that I did want to have a chat with, and Italian, it was better to do in Italian. But otherwise, I think 99% of our guests are either English or English speaking guests. So most of the time it's in English.
Okay. And I see you're with Anchor as well. So, and you've got a YouTube channel. So I've looked at it. You've got brilliant videos that are on that with fantastic explanations. Are you actually putting both of them up on YouTube or do you do a kind of different videos for your YouTube channel?
Yes. You mean Anchor and YouTube?
Yeah. Are you putting the interview that you've done on the thing? Because it was more small ones, little snippets that I watched. I looked at a lot of them. There was some brilliant content that you have on your YouTube channel.
Thank you. Yeah, we do a few things. So we use Anchor, which I love because, you upload it there and then automatically goes on all the different podcasting platforms. But we do it for the audio version. Then on top of that, we upload the full video version on YouTube and our podcast, the Ideas on Stage podcast. It's a sort of a long form podcast. On average, each interview is about an hour. But then in addition to that, for those who like to see small clips, we take from each interview, we take the most interesting things that the guest said. And we've got very quick videos, maybe 1 minute, 2-3 minute videos. And we upload that on YouTube and on the other social media platforms as well.
Oh, that's something I'll have to start doing that I'm not doing. I'm not extracting the little clips from it. And I know how beneficial it can be. So I know that is it something like 500 TEDx speakers that you've helped? That's incredible. I mean, that among the numbers. So I suppose those that aspire to be TEDx speakers, you probably know how some of them are landing it, and then go into the journey of kind of the tips that you would kind of tell them.
Yeah. So first of all, it's not that I have worked just me with 500 TEDx speakers as a team at Ideas on Stage with my colleagues as well. Combined, yes, we have over the, because we started in 2010, so 13 years ago. Yes, we've worked with more than 500 TEDx speakers. We've got a lot of ongoing collaborations with TEDx events. And in terms of tips, now we could spend hours here. I could give you just the big picture and then we can unpack it and go into more detail as you like, Roy. So for me, the way I look at it is this. When I think about presenting public speaking, for me, there are three key skills that we need to master. The first one, which is the most important one, we need to have the ability to develop a compelling message. Without that, without a captivating story that's relevant to the audience, nothing else matters. So it's the message, that's the content of your speeches, of your presentations, that's the most important thing. And we can talk about later, if you want, how to do that. How can we develop a compelling message? Then on top of that, because you mentioned TED, TEDx talks, but even in business, we work a lot with business clients on business presentations. Often we use slides. It doesn't have to be a slide, but we often try to illustrate our content. And the problem I see, Roy, is that I often see the typical death by PowerPoint, where you've got lots of text and bullet points. People can't read and listen at the same time. So we need to learn how to reinforce and support and amplify our content effectively from a visual perspective, if the context allows you to use that kind of tool. And then the third element is the delivery side of things. So it's not just the message, but also it's the way you deliver your message. So the delivery aspect, these are things like voice or eye contact, gestures, body language. So it's not what you say, it's how you say it. I think that what you say, the content, the message of your presentation is the most important thing, but we also need to pay attention to the way we say it. And it's a bit like if one of these three key elements is missing, you will find it hard to reach your objective. It's a bit like, Roy, think about movies. When you watch a movie has the screenplay and that's the content. That's the message of the movie, the story. A movie also has the acting, great actors, and that covers the delivery side of things. And a movie also has special effects. And if one of these three key elements is missing, you will not enjoy that movie. The same is true with presentations and public speaking in general. If one of these three key areas, message, visuals, if we need them, and delivery, if one of them is missing, we are going to find it hard to reach our objective.
Okay, excellent. And you mentioned the eye contact, and I'm just curious what way you'd advise people when sometimes you're on a stage and, to be honest, you feel like a dazzled rabbit. There's so much light, so you don't really see anything. When you look out there, you know, you can't even see someone putting their hand up. But what's your kind of advice on a situation like that for eye contact?
The only thing you can do there is to know what the best practice is. And then first, you need to understand and practice it when you can see people, because of course, you're right, it's much easier. But then once you've done it and you've done it enough times and you know what the best practice is, then even if you can't see them, it becomes second nature. So even if you can't see them, then you will be able to make good eye contact anyway. And the best practice when it comes to in-person presentations is that it's always a person-to-person interaction. So what we need to do is we need to look at each person in the audience. It doesn't matter whether you've got two people in front of you or 2,000 people in front of you. It's always a person-to-person interaction. So the way I do it, for example, is I try to look at one person for pretty much a full sentence. When I change sentence, I look at somebody else. Another sentence, I look at somebody else. So person-to-person interaction, one sentence, one person. Another sentence, another person. And what happens, if you have a big audience, if you look at one person, not just one area, because you don't want to look at people over the eyes, you want to look at one person and make good eye contact. When you look at that person, the 5 or 10 people around that person will think that you're looking at them. So the takeaway for our listeners is, it's always a person-to-person interaction. One sentence, one person. We change sentence, we change the person we're looking at.
Okay, excellent. And sometimes they kind of ask the audience for questions, and other times there's people, they just kind of interject. And they're trying to show, you know, there's people, they're not coming from a good place. They're trying to put down the speaker and try to make themselves look more knowledgeable. In situations like that, what's your best advice?
My best advice would be that as a speaker, you, in that particular moment, you are the boss. So you have the, you need to find ways to control the situation, to control the room. And in the end, if you know what you are talking about, what happens is that you're right, sometimes it does happen that you've got somebody there who makes it hard for the speaker. And often what I find in my experience is that those people, what they really want, it's not really about the content of that question. I don't want to generalize, but often that's what I see. It's not about the content of that question. It's not about something that you said or something that they want to clarify. Often they just have a need to feel heard. They want to be listened to. And so if you just give them a platform quickly, you need to do it quickly to feel them, to make them feel heard, that you are addressing their concerns, their needs, then do that. Try to address their challenge in a way which is as quick as possible. The challenge becomes when they keep going. If they keep going, they keep going, that becomes a challenge. But then that's what I meant just now, that you are the boss, you need to control the situation. And then you, as the speaker, if somebody is being hard and they keep going, you have the right to close the conversation there. You can say something along the lines of, look, in the interest of everybody's time, perhaps the best thing to do, let's agree to disagree, and the best thing to do is to take it offline. So after the presentation, I would be very happy to have a chat, but now let's move on. And you just say, let's move on, and you move on.
Excellent. Yeah. So you kind of talked earlier about kind of delivering a compelling message. You might kind of take a few layers on that, because sometimes people have something in their head and they don't really get the message across. So how can we kind of educate people on how to do something that the audience will actually understand?
For me, Roy, there are five key principles to consider. A good message, a compelling message, is a message that meets five principles. There are five key success factors for great presentations. Remember the word score. You want to score when you give a presentation, a bit like in football. Now, score stands for simple, clear, original, related, which means it has to be relevant to the audience, and enjoyable. So a message needs to meet these five principles. Simple, because the more you say, the less they remember. So you need to keep it short, simple, and to the point. Clear, because your key messages should be obvious to everybody, including you as the presenter. Often that's not the case. Original, because you want your presentation to stand out, to be a bit different, so that they'll pay more attention and remember it for longer. Related, because when we give a presentation, that's the biggest thing. It's always their presentation, not ours. It's always the audience's presentation. And so we need to make sure that what we say is useful and relevant to them, to the audience. And then enjoyable, well, of course, if the audience enjoys your talk, again, they'll pay more attention, they'll remember more, and maybe they'll do what we want them to do. They'll take action, and that's why that's important. Now, Roy, I just gave you the big picture, these five principles, but of course, I'm happy to unpack each of them, to give you examples, but you are the boss, so you choose, you tell me.
No, it's interesting. And I'm kind of with the TED or TEDx. There's a few things, because there's the nerves, because I've seen people, I done an open mic and I could see people that were kind of experienced speakers and they were pacing up and down. They were petrified. It's like handling the nerves is kind of, because it's probably, this will help those that are probably wanting to come on stage as well for the first time, not on a TEDx, but just to start speaking. A lot of people are experiencing nerve issues, no matter how experienced they are.
A lot of them, maybe even all of them. Mark Twain used to say, Roy, that there are only two types of speakers, those who get nervous and those who are liars. So if somebody tells you, I get on stage and I feel nothing, I'm not 100% sure. I'm a presentation coach. I give presentations all the time, online, on stage. I help others in our company. We help others do the same, but I have no problems in saying that I always feel a bit nervous before presenting. Now, of course, there are things we can do to address that in an effective way. For example, I'll give you some very practical, little but practical things we can do. Drinking water, even in this podcast, it's not a presentation, but I always make sure that I have some water with me. Movement. If you are waiting for your turn to be called as a speaker, rather than waiting there while being seated, then if you have an opportunity to move around a little bit, that nerves causes a lot of excess energy, energy in excess, in surplus, to flow through your body. So what you want to do is you want to get that energy out. And a good way to do that is to move. If you can move outside, in the open air, that's even better. So drinking water, movement, breathing. Breathing is a wonderful thing, especially if we know how to breathe correctly, which means breathing with your belly, not with this part of the body. So you want to breathe with your belly. That's how relaxation happens. So that's another thing. Although we can think about and try to implement any of these techniques, like water, movement, breathing, but what really makes a difference is whether or not we rehearse. The best way to address or overcome public speaking nerves or anxiety is to know what you're talking about. And the best way to know what you're talking about is to rehearse. And rehearsing doesn't mean just thinking about what to say. It's really about repeating your presentation out loud, not in your head, out loud from the very beginning to the very end without stopping, as if there is a real audience in front of you. And the more you do that, the more confident you will become on stage.
And because with all the different guests that I've got, there's people telling me their preparation for TEDx, you know, some of them do it a couple of hundred times, and someone else was saying that they'd done one like that, and the next one, they knew what they were speaking. Obviously, they knew their opening and their closing, but they kind of done it more in flow than repeating. And I'm just curious, well, I think for the TEDx, it's kind of hard because you're kind of, you know, 18 minutes or whatever they, you know, allocate for you. But what's your thoughts on that, both on the TED stage and outside of that room?
In my experience, there are two types of speakers. You have the improvisers and the memorizers. The improvisers like to have more freedom on stage. The memorizers like to follow a script, even word for word. And by the way, Roy, there's no right or wrong approach. There's only the approach that works for you. So for example, in my role, I need to make sure that we find an approach that works for each particular speaker. So there is no right or wrong approach. However, it doesn't really matter whether you are an improviser or a memorizer, I would always encourage you to rehearse a number of times. Now, you mentioned, like somebody told you, I did it 200 times. Again, there is no magic number. What works for you may not work for me and vice versa. But I can tell you, based on experience, it's very hard, very, very hard to get to a point where you've internalized your message. You need to own your message. It's very hard to get to the point unless you, especially for presentations like TED Talks or conferences, keynotes, unless you've rehearsed about 10 times. I would say, Roy, the very, very minimum is 3 times. That's the very, very minimum, especially for big presentations. If I think about me, if I think about our clients, 10 times tends to be a good number. And here is the thing. It's not about memorizing. So unless memorization is what works for you, I wouldn't encourage you to memorize word for word, apart from, you're right, introduction and conclusion. The very first lines and the very last lines, I would encourage everybody to memorize those. But apart from these two parts, it's not about memorizing. It's about internalizing your message. And internalizing it means that you've practiced enough times that you know it so well, you know exactly what the structure is, what you need to do, what you need to say, what the next slide is. So that's what I mean by internalizing. And this is where we want to get to. Because you mentioned TED Talks, you made me think of the organizer. He used to be the main organizer of the conference, TED, Chris Anderson. I think he's no longer doing it. And Chris Anderson is the author of a book, TED Talks, which is the official guide to public speaking guide to TED Talks. And he uses a great analogy. He says that rehearsing is a bit like climbing a mountain. And he says, if you think about it, if you want to climb a mountain, let's say that you start climbing, you start going up, and then you stop, you will never get to the top of the mountain. And so what you need to do is you need to keep climbing. Rehearsing is the same thing. If you have an important presentation coming up, let's say that you rehearse once or twice, then what will happen, of course, is that you will appear robotic. And that's why a lot of people say, I don't want to rehearse, because if I do, then I appear robotic, whereas I don't want to do that. I want to be natural. I want to be myself. Now, when you appear robotic, often it's not because you have rehearsed. It's because you haven't done enough. You need to keep climbing. You need to get to the top of the mountain, which means that you need to keep rehearsing a few more times. And getting to the top of the mountain means that you are in a position where you have internalized, not necessarily memorized, but internalized your message. And that's what makes a difference.
No. Perfect. And like I've been heavily involved in Toastmasters for a few years. And I mean, I'm more not the memory guy. I'm more in flow. And I have seen, even watching the international speech, I mean, some of them, the speeches are brilliant, but they're robotic. Like you can see they're not speaking from the heart yet. Unfortunately, the judges are going with that. And that's why a lot of people tend to hate the Toastmasters style as well, then, because they believe it kind of ruins some of the speakers. So like my own personal belief is I think it's fantastic for actually getting started, getting on stage, going to competitions, doing evaluations, table topics, you know, standing in on your feet, ticking on your feet, but not to just stick with that kind of model, because I have seen some, they're brilliant with what they're creating, the content and everything, but you just know it's repetition, which
and that's why I said at the beginning, it's not just the message, it's also the way you deliver your message. Again, I think, Roy, the message is still the most important thing. It's 80%, but then it's also how you deliver it. And say, for example, that you have a great message, you've developed a compelling message which meets, for example, the five principles we are talking about: simple, clear, original, relevant, enjoyable. Let's also say that you've got very beautiful and effective slides that amplify your message. If the way you deliver your message is not very effective, it's a bit like having a Ferrari without knowing how to drive. It doesn't really make sense, right? If you've got that fantastic car, which is your great message, you need to be able to drive it. You need to be able to deliver it in a way that's comfortable and convincing. And that's why we also need to pay attention to, for example, you asked about eye contact or body language, gestures, all these kind of things. Because, and then I'll stop here, but because you said that, for example, you tend to be more of an improviser, here is my take on this. Even if you are an improviser, I would always encourage you to rehearse a number of times. And it doesn't matter if, because you are an improviser or more of an improviser, of course, every time you rehearse your presentation, you may say different things. You could use different sentences, different words. That's totally fine. But I can promise you that whatever, if you rehearse, whatever you say will be much more powerful the fifth time you say than the first.
You're absolutely right, because what happened is, I mean, obviously, when I'm going through a competition, you see how much better you get. But when I was in the different clubs, if nobody turned up, as in like they were supposed to speak and then they kind of buckled at the last minute, or a speaker didn't turn up or something, I'd say, yeah, I'll do a speech. And I was able to kind of do stuff on that. And then I'd do as many as possible. And what the two people called me out one day, they said, listen, you're a brilliant speaker, but we know that it's not prepared. And it kind of, and I acknowledge it. I says, all right, you're right. And the next speech, I really put effort. And they said it was my best speech ever. And it was still kind of speaking from the heart, but it was like really planning and practicing a lot just to make sure. And it just shows, like, I mean, you know, for things like that. And if you were doing anything, you have to prepare, definitely, without a doubt. You know, you're honoring your audience because you can't, you know, when you do that, they know it as well. They know that you're not winging it, let's say, because anyone could wing it. I mean, I could go on stage and talk about speaking, podcasting, anything, just now for an hour, no bother. You could do the same on a few different topics. But if you want to do it right and do it in flow and everything and have it a clear message at the end, you spend a good few, you know, maybe half a day preparing it properly.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And the most important thing you said, Roy, is that you want to do it as a matter of respect for the audience. And that's why I said the most important thing to take away, if there's one thing, I hope that people here, our listeners, take away more than just one thing. But if they take away just one thing from this conversation, is that it's always about the audience. When we give a presentation, it's not our presentation, it's the audience's presentation. So everything we do from a message perspective, from a visual perspective, from a delivery perspective, also in terms of preparation, the amount of time we invest is because we are doing it for them. Of course, then indirectly what happens is that if we do a good job for them, then it's more likely that we achieve our objective. But then the foundation of the presentation process is always about the audience.
And you mentioned, I think, Mark Twain previously. So I had seen, I think it's your website, where you've got a load of stuff on public speaking and everything. It's kind of like a blog. And there's some brilliant things. So, like, has that led to kind of finding clients? Because why I'm asking is, for those that are actually trying to build their speaking career, do you recommend kind of the blog, that the content that you're putting out there is actually kind of leading to a flow into your client list?
I highly recommend, it doesn't have to be necessarily a blog, it could be, but anyway, I recommend content creation. Yes. Now, what you're doing with your podcast or podcasts is content creation. You create content. It could be your own content. Now you are interviewing me, you interview somebody else. For us, it's a mix of things. We've got the blog, and yes, there are hundreds of articles since 2010 in our blog. We've got our own podcast, the Ideas on Stage podcast, where we interview, as you do, like other experts on themes that are connected to leadership communication, public speaking, presentation skills. It could be quick videos, could be a brief article. There are many possibilities. And yes, we do. It's not the only way we do it, but we do find work from all of these channels. So it could be, and what people need to do is, I think, and I'm not an expert at these things, but we need to find the best approach that works for us. You've got those who are great writers. You've got others who are more comfortable speaking on camera. So if you are more of a video person, then make a video. A video per day, a video per week. If you're more of a writing person, then start a blog. Whatever works for you, you start with that. And then, by the way, today it's very easy from a content marketing perspective, it's very easy to repurpose things. So if you think about it, we were talking about it before, Roy. You could do what you're doing now. You could do a 1 hour, maybe a half an hour conversation with a guest, and you've got the video. Now, once you have the video, in one click, you have the audio as well. So you've got a video version, you've got an audio version. You could take, again, we were talking about it before, just a few small clips. So one long form video becomes maybe 10 small clips that you can share over a number of weeks on social media. Each clip, which is a video, could become an article. You could transcribe it and you've got an article as well. So I'm very big on, I'm very interested in not just content creation, but also repurposing content. So thinking strategically about the content you put out, because rather than doing so many things, you just do it once. If you do it strategically and you do it well, then from that piece of content, you can create or repurpose many others. That could become a quote. You've got a small clip. That clip could become a quote that you share on social media as well. So there are many possibilities.
Brilliant, brilliant. And I, like, as I was watching you there, I know I do it myself, because when you said tink, it was the hand. You do a lot of hand gestures. And I'm just curious, yeah, your advice to people on stage or even online with hand gestures.
And you do it as well, Roy. Now, the hand gestures, here is the thing. The more you move your hands, the more dynamic you will be. And the audience likes that. You want to be a dynamic speaker. Now, of course, you don't want to do it too much, but the more you move your hands, the more dynamic you will be. Now, hand gestures is an interesting thing, because if you think about it, when you have a conversation with a friend, Roy, and I'm not talking about you, but in general, we have a conversation with a friend, whether we are aware of it or not, but we use our hands. Because we know the person, we know what we are talking about, it happens naturally. Without even thinking about it, that's the key thing. We never think about what we are doing with our hands when we have a conversation with a friend. As soon as the dynamic is a little bit different, more formal, it's a presentation, then often these two things, our hands, start taking on a life of their own. We don't know what to do with them. So here is what we can do with our hands when speaking in public. We've got three options. The first option is that we don't move them at all. And it is one option. Now, we don't have to move our hands all the time. Sometimes we can have a rest position. You could just have your hands. Now, people can't see me, but I'm not moving my hands at all. I'm speaking. You could hold the clicker if you've got some slides. You can have a rest position. You don't have to move your hands all the time. The second option is that you move your hands without intention, which means without thinking about what happens, without any connection to the message you are communicating. And if you are prepared, we are connecting the dots in this conversation, Roy. If we go back to what we were talking about before in terms of being prepared, rehearsing, if you've done that preparation, that will happen. Whether you are aware of it or not, but you will move your hands. That's why when you have a conversation with a friend, you do move your hands without even realizing it, because you know what you're talking about. So the second option is to move your hands without thinking about what you do with them. The third option is that you move your hands with purpose or with intention, which means that you connect your hand gestures to the message you want to get across. Now, for those who are watching the video today, for our listeners, it's a bit harder. But for example, Roy, this is an example. Now I'm connecting my hand gesture to something I'm saying. This thing here is an intentional hand gesture. Or I could tell you, now I'm doing, for our listeners, I'm doing three with my hands. I could tell you that there are three key things you can do with your hands. This, doing three with your hands, is another example of an intentional hand gesture. Or we could talk about the differences between in-person presentations and online presentations. Again, for our listeners, I'm moving my hands as I do it. And this is another example of an intentional hand gesture. Now, the key is to find the right balance among these three options, which means that within the same presentation, sometimes you do nothing with your hands. You don't have to move them all the time. Sometimes, and I would say most of the time, move your hands without thinking about what happens. If you are prepared, if you rehearse, that will happen naturally. But then what you can also do is plan 3 to 5 intentional hand movements. 3 to 5, not more than that, movements that are connected to some of the key points you want to get across. If you do that, and if you are prepared, that will help you find the right balance among these three options. So that's how I approach hand gestures.
Perfect. Excellent. And I believe you're writing a book, or have you released it? You're planning it for this year, yes?
Yes, I'm writing a book which most likely will be published in the next few months. The title is Confident Presenter. And it's about that. It's for business owners, leaders, and the teams who want to become more credible, confident, and convincing presenters. And it's a book about one thing only, which is the message side of things. So we said there are three key things to consider: message, visuals, and delivery. Because I think that 80% of your confidence comes from your ability to craft a compelling message, I decided to focus the book almost only. There are a couple of things, a couple of sections on delivery, on slide design as well, but the main thing is the message. So confident presenter. And because you asked about the book, let me also mention we have another book in a company that we published last year. My colleague Phil Wakenell wrote, of course I'm biased, but I do think it's a fantastic book, Business Presentation Revolution. So that's by Phil Wakenell, who is the co-founder of Ideas on Stage.
Okay, cool. And what I'll do is I'll make sure that when it is released, you let me know and I'll make sure I'll put that link as well, because I can update the thing. Just finally then, because I always love to know what the social media, because we're bombarded. There's 50 million things. There's Pinterest, there's Snapchat, there's everything. What's your go-to, especially in the speaking field?
My go-to is LinkedIn. I use LinkedIn on a daily basis. I like it. I also have an Instagram account, which I use, although I tend to participate in the actual conversation on LinkedIn much more than Instagram. There's also a Facebook page as well. Although here's my approach, Roy. And again, it's not that I'm a social media expert, but the way I like to do it is I like to choose one thing, one platform, which is my main platform, and that's LinkedIn for me. And then I use a few of the others. I like to be at least to be present on a few of the main ones, like Facebook and Instagram, but it's more of a presence thing. Whereas the actual conversation with the audience for me is on LinkedIn.
Okay. Andrew, thoroughly enjoyed our conversation, and I hope people will actually go back and listen to all the tips that you've given, because you've given fantastic information. You might let people know where they can find you.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity, Roy. Just a couple of things. One is our website is ideasonstage.com. Again, they can find me on LinkedIn. People, for our listeners, feel free to connect, say hi, Andrea Pacini, you can find me there. And perhaps just one thing that our listeners may find useful, which is our scorecard. We have a tool, we have an online tool, Roy, the Confident Presenter Scorecard, which is a way for people to assess very quickly, for free, online, they can assess their current presentation skills against the five principles we've talked about: simple, clear, original, related, and enjoyable. It takes less than 3 minutes. They just need to answer a few questions, yes or no. And then their scorecard will give you a score. It will tell from 0 to 100%. It will tell you what that score means for you. And it also identifies opportunities for improvement on each of the five principles. And then when you complete the scorecard, you get immediate instant access to a digital copy, the PDF version of, at the moment, Business Presentation Revolution by Phil Wakenell, my colleague. And in a few weeks or months, it will be also Confident Presenter, the upcoming book. The link for that is ideasonstage.com/score. Like when you score a goal.
Okay, perfect. I'll make sure I'll put all the websites, the score, and your LinkedIn on both the audio and the video. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Roy.
No worries. So that's all for the Speaking Podcast. You'll find all our episodes on speakingpodcast.com. As mentioned, we're on BitChute and YouTube, and you'll find my other 4 podcasts: Meditation, Crypto, Learn Polish, and Awakening, Exposing Fraud and Corruption, as well as my coaching on bio.link/podcaster. Sure to give us a thumbs up, 5-star rating, and a review. And make sure you check out Andrew's podcast. Give him a 5-star rating as well. It all helps. Until next week, take care.